Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. Now, this month's program is going to be a little bit different in that after 28 years of Prophet University, this will be our final episode in this format. Along the years, a lot has changed. Along the years, technology has changed and the way that people listen to audio programs has changed. And so as a result, this current format that we currently have will be coming to an end. And we thought that it would be worthwhile to take a moment and spend a little bit of time just chatting about the history of this program, how we got to where we are today, and quite honestly, some of the incredible gold that's sitting in that library of programs. So, Tom, 28 years, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
It sure has. I was a little younger back then.
Yeah, a little bit younger, hair a little bit darker, right, along the way.
Yeah, I had hair, period.
Yeah, right? No doubt. So let me ask you, right, wanted to go back how did, if you think about it, right, so it's been 28 years. Right. When you originally started this audio series, how did the idea or where did that idea come from to put together an audio program that could benefit contractors around the world?
That's a really good question. I think everybody has a quiet place or a particular area or a thing they do that where their mind is in such a position that you can think. My odds place like that is actually in the shower. Every good idea I've ever had for this company has come when I've been taking a shower in the morning. Why? Yeah. I don't go intentionally in there and say, hey, let me think of something. It just happens. So I was reflecting on having been in business at that point, I think 5, 6, maybe 7 years. Business training in the industry was still relatively new. There wasn't a lot of training going on. So we were trying to find ways to touch more contractors. Obviously, if you're one person, you can only put on so many seminars and touch so many people. So we're trying to find some method of getting good business information out on a continuous basis and make that available to contractors across the country. The idea came up to have this monthly program, which has actually changed names half a dozen times over the years. Basically, to gather information from contractors, business leaders, presenters, people who are well-known in the trades industry, kind of pick their brain a little bit and have them do a presentation, a short one. Usually it's about 30, 45 minutes, so that contractors would have something to listen to. From a technology standpoint, we may cover this later, but it started out as cassette tapes. Of course, half the people listening to this don't even know what a cassette tape is.
But right, absolutely.
Back then, everybody had a cassette tape player, so we started sending them out on cassettes. And after a while, technology changed again, and that moved away from cassettes to CDs. So we did CDs for a number of years and sent those out across the country. And from there, the digital world advanced. And as you know, right now, it's offered through our website, and anybody in the world can get it, listen to it on their phone or anywhere else they want to be.
Right. It certainly has changed in terms of delivering that technology. And so, you know, let's actually talk about that for a moment, because when you think about this, right, so you're a company, you're about 5, 6, 7 years in, in the life of Grandy and Associates at that point in time. And how do you pull something like that off? I mean, because it's a lot easier today to do this than it was back at that point, because, I mean, let's be honest, right? You're still in Owensboro, Kentucky. I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We're doing this virtually, and we can put all this stuff together remotely, right? And we've been doing it every single month for a long time. It wasn't that easy when you started out.
No, it wasn't. We realized we needed an announcer to begin with, and somebody other than myself, so we found a company actually in Cincinnati, Ohio. I live in Owensboro, Kentucky. The only recording studio I could find at the time that did recordings for cassette tapes. And they had a guy there who was a professional announcer. He'd done many, many different things like that. And then we realized we needed some kind of introduction with music, and you can't just snatch something because of music rights, et cetera. So We had to go out and find somebody who would do a short intro for us that belonged to us that we could put on the front end. And then each month we would script things out on a piece of paper and we'd send it to him on what he wanted to say. And they would splice it together, make the original. And then we found a place in Texas that would actually duplicate the cassette tape. So all that would be sent down there. And usually that was about a 3 to 4 week process. So you were always trying to stay ahead on those things. It wasn't quite as easy as it was today, but we got it done.
So did you actually just record it yourself on a cassette recorder at your office?
The ones that I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But everybody else would just send a cassette tape to you and you would take and splice it, piece it together from there.
Actually, I'd send the recording studio after I'd listened to it with a cut here, cut here, cut here.
Ah,
you know that process. So
sure. Absolutely. No question. So yeah, the other thing that's always kind of interesting, right? So again, think back, you're a small company at that point in time. And you know, many of our contractors, right, we think we get these great ideas, right? The ones that come in the shower, the ones that come at 2 a.m, right? And some of these are the ones that you wake up the next morning and going, what on earth was I dreaming, right? How did I come up with that idea? Right. And some of them actually come to fruition, as this one did. So when you think about that, I mean, what did it take to, I mean, so, okay, you got the tape from a speaker, sent it to Cincinnati. They spliced it, put the intro on it. You got it back. You sent it to Texas to have it duplicated. And then you get this case of cassette tapes back. Right. and you had to physically somehow mail these things out. Right. So I mean, what did that process look like?
It was a long process because at one point in time, we had over $10,000 worth of cassette tapes going out each month. So mm-hmm. We had one lady at the office. The tapes would come in big cardboard boxes. I would go to Office Depot and buy some of the proper size envelopes. We would print the labels off on our computer with people's names on them and set up a little assembly line. And at that point in time, we also had a piece of paper that was in the middle of it that explained some of what was going on, kind of a summary. So we'd fold the summary, stick in the tape, put on the label, throw them in these great big boxes and haul them over to the post office and out they'd go.
Wow. And that's not a quick process to do when you're doing that many of them.
It isn't. The irony is to get a decent price on the cassette tape production, you had to order a certain number of cassette tapes. Well, back then we were ordering probably 500 to 800 tapes a month. And there would be anywhere from 25 to 150 tapes left over. So sure. We put them on the shelves and pretty soon we had a whole room full of cassette tapes. Well, when the industry changed and we got away from cassette tapes, I literally had over 5,000 cassette tapes down there. And couldn't give them away. I tried. I took them to the university. I said, "Do you want these?" Nobody wanted them.
Yeah, it's because you're right. You have these quantity discounts, and okay, I don't need the extra 100, but it costs me more if I produce 100 less. And so, that was an interesting time, and I do remember. At the time when we transferred or handed off the baton and bought up the company, the entire room of at that time, it was all CDs. Mm-hmm. Hauling a lot of that inventory of CDs back to Green Bay at that point in time. So that's kind of interesting. Now, as we go through and look at these, right? You had mentioned the transitions, right? We went from cassette tape to CD to the online version. What prompted it, right? I mean, technology's changing, right? But there's a cost to keep up with that current technology, isn't there? Right?
There's a cost in time mm-hmm. in terms of trying to explore what's where and how to get it. And in the case of the CDs, we needed to produce those. So it wasn't just finding out how to do that. But when the CDs came in, we had to put labels on the front of them. So we had to find out about label machines and learn how to operate those. And again, do them by hand, 10 at a time. It was automatic. We pushed the button, but you could only do 10 at a time. So
yeah,
took a while.
Yeah, no doubt. And I still talk to contractors today as you do, right? And they talk about having the the stack of either cassette tapes or of CDs sitting in their office that they still go back to. And I got them there, but there's too much gold in them. I don't want to get rid of them. That kind of comment. And we still hear that regularly. And I love hearing that that comment. So one of the, there have been in 28 years, over 335 different monthly programs. So every single month, finding another speaker with the solid content that we're providing. I'm curious, do you have a favorite, one program that you would say, man, this was the program, or is there just too many of them to narrow that down?
Probably my favorite of all of them is one done by Sharon Roberts called Selling to Women. Because it not only applied to the business, it applied to me personally.
Have you noticed that women and men listen differently? Perhaps you've noticed that when women are listening, they smile a lot, they make lots of eye contact, they nod their heads, they say things like uh-huh and They have facial expressions that clearly communicate understanding. Now, a lot of times, men misinterpret what all this smiling and eye contact and head nodding, all this facial expression, they misunderstand what that means. They believe it means that the woman wants to hear more. So the salesman keeps on talking, and the woman keeps on smiling and nodding, and he keeps on talking. But as she is smiling and nodding, she is silently saying, I can't believe how rude this guy is. He is just rattling on and on. He hasn't given me a chance to get a single word in edgewise. What a jerk. But you know, I bet he really isn't a jerk. I believe he just misunderstands her polite listening behavior. Now here's where the misunderstanding comes in. Women are socialized to take turns listening and speaking. Women are socialized to never interrupt. Instead, you take turns. When the other person has finished speaking, then you take your turn. Now, men are taught a very different set of guidelines. When you want to turn, you just interrupt. Just jump right in there and make your point. So you see, the salesman would probably be shocked if he knew she thought he was a jerk. Because from his point of view, if she has something to say or a question to ask, why doesn't she just jump right in there and say it? So guideline number one, let her complete her thought or question. Above all, avoid interrupting her.
She tells a story about how women get together, and when they all together, they talk. Everybody talks out loud. Nobody seems to be listening to anybody. When you and I talk, I'm quiet, you listen to me, I listen to you. But when women talk, most of them talk out loud. And what she was saying is, women tend, not all of them for sure, but a lot of women tend to think out loud. So whatever they're thinking, they're saying. And then she tied that into the selling end of it, talking about the salesperson who goes out there and is trying to sell a unit or whatever it happens to be to a woman. And the woman's thinking out loud and asking all these questions and going on and on and on. And the salesperson's getting more and more frustrated. And finally, they interrupt him and say, just answer the question, or do you want it or not? And as soon as that happens, the sale is over with. I mean, yep. She's not say a thing, but she's turned off inside and she's never going to buy that from you. And I realized I was doing the same thing with my wife. I'd come home and she'd have a problem and I'd try to solve it. And she'd keep on talking, and pretty soon she'd get upset. And then I realized, you know, if I just let her talk, like Sharon suggested, and at the end, she really didn't have a problem. She just wanted to verbalize it to somebody. So sure. To me, that was one of my favorite tapes of all time.
Yeah, there's no question. And I remember when that program hit, and it was just actually, I thought back to it recently in that my wife and I were buying a new car. And really, my wife was buying the new car, not me. Right. Because it was her vehicle. I had my truck. I'm happy with my truck. Right. So she had gone out. She'd found, three, four, five different vehicles she wanted to take a look at. And we went and looked at them. And I remember sitting in the car dealership at that point, talking to the salesman. And this was just literally, I think, 3 years ago. And the salesman kept directing all of his questions to me. Mm. And I'd say, well, you know, Pam, what do you think? Right. She'd answer the question and he'd ask another question to me. And finally, after about, you know, 8 minutes of this, you know, my wife looked at him and said, look, he's not buying this car. I'm buying the car. You ask him another question and I'm walking out of here. You know, and you know, it's that same process, right? Really understanding who your customer is so important as you go forward. So I'm curious, you know, if we go through and look at it, I mean, I looked through some of these programs that were out there and there's so many titles, right? So to find, it's almost an unfair question to ask you which one is your favorite. And, you know, as you go out there and you look at some of these programs, there have been a bunch of them. That have been really that we've done over the years, right? And so I wanted to just play a couple of little clips. Now, one of the programs that I still kind of chuckle at, and it seems to be coming back around, is a program that you did called Pizza Hut Ruined the Market. And interesting program. Let's just take a real quick listen to just a minute or two of this particular program.
Well, over the last few weeks, I've noticed something in our small town of Owensboro, Kentucky. At least once a day, I drive down Frederica Street, the main street in town. As I'm driving, I pass a Pizza Hut. A few weeks ago, the owners had stuck a flag banner along the street that stated, any size pizza, any toppings, $10. That caught my eye. And my initial thought was, this is a great deal. The pizza I usually order runs $15 unless I have a discount coupon. Now it's time to test the advertisement and have a pizza. Sure enough, any size pizza, any toppings, was only $10. I instantly forgot about the other places we buy pizza because Pizza Hut was the place to be. Quality food and the price was right. I was so excited, or cheap, that my wife and I took my pastor and his wife there for dinner. They, too, were truly amazed. Well, guess what happened over the next few weeks? Now, every pizza place in town was offering any size, any toppings, $10. Guess what? Pizza Hut didn't look so great anymore. Now, everybody was doing it, and I was beginning to feel about the pizza industry like it did about the auto industry. I've been paying $15 for large pizzas for years, and now everybody's selling them for $10. Boy, had I and the general public been ripped off for a lot of years. If they can make money at $10, then they must have been making a huge profit at $15. What started out as a great idea from Pizza Hut had suddenly ruined the industry. Sound familiar? The economy's been down for the past 12 to 24 months. What have most contractors done? Right, they've lowered their price. What are we now telling the customer without saying it? Right again, we've been ripping you off at the higher prices we used to charge. And guess what? When one contractor lowered his price, so did the guy down the street. Does that sound familiar? Oh yeah, Pizza Hut ruined the market. And we're doing the same thing. The reality is that most contractors have lowered their pricing without making the corresponding reductions in their overhead cost. The net result was predictable. We're now underpriced. Now what happens? The more we sell, the quicker we go out of business.
So that's a program that was interesting. I mean, you listen to that one today. You did that one a number of years ago, and there's not a word in that document or that program that doesn't resonate today. Right? I mean, initial thoughts on that one?
You're right. We're repeating ourselves again. I mean, that was back in 2008, 2009, when the economy crashed. Everybody was scrambling trying to get sales, period. And the reality didn't hit a lot of people, just what we're talking about in the tape, that they didn't cut their overhead, they just cut their price. And the more they sold, the quicker they went out of business. And that's exactly what happened to multiple companies, especially in the trades industry. Because as we all know, most trades contractors have a excellent technical background, do a great job, but don't have much business background. So the natural thing is we need more sales, so we cut the price. And from a logical standpoint, that sounds like it makes sense. But from a financial standpoint, it was disaster.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that same thing happen again today, right? Contractors lowering their price. And interestingly, right? So I'll go back to Pizza Hut for a moment. I mean, look at it today, right? You can go to Little Caesars and get a large, any pre-made large pizza for $6, at least here in our community, right? And so, are their costs going down? I think not, right? And so now granted, it doesn't have a whole lot on that $6 pizza, but, again, same thing applies. And a lot of our contractors, we're already seeing that take place, right? That's lowering the price, running into some of those issues. And you do a nice job in that program, Tom, of then going back and stressing the importance of knowing what your costs are, right? Make sure that you're charging what you need to charge, that sort of thing. I thought that was a great program. Now, there's another program that was out there that was done by Roger Pujol from Kansas City. Roger the plumber, right, did a program called 100% Customer Satisfaction. That program, well, let's just listen to a minute of it real quick, because Roger starts out really setting the stage pretty quickly.
Martin Luther King had a dream for his people. Well, I have a dream too. And my people are all the tradespeople in America. Plumbers, electricians, heating and cooling techs. My dream is that they all be respected and richly rewarded for the impeccable service they provide to keep America's machinery and systems functioning. So what do I think is missing from achieving that dream? I think that the leaders of the trades, the members of the professional organizations, need to individually transform how they relate to their customers. Because I can assure you that in big box stores, the public is receiving bad advice, poor service, crummy parts, and untrained, sloppy installations, and they're getting it late. What we need to do is set ourselves apart from all of that. The professional trades need to provide 100% customer satisfaction. I'm proud that I have committed to that. I made my 100% promise, and it changed my life. And ever since January 15th, 1995, that has been my identity. In this tape, I'll tell you how I made the promise, how I deliver on it every day, why I did it, and how you can do it, and share some key strategies that will save you thousands upon thousands of dollars.
So interestingly, right, I mean, that was, and you heard it in there, two items, right? Number one, in this tape, and what was it, 1996, that he referred to is when he did that. And again, there's nothing in that program that isn't still applicable today. Thoughts on that program, Tom? Because you integrated that into a lot of your content along the years.
Yeah, like everything else, it all boils down to money when you get to it. When you have a dissatisfied customer in general, what happens? Well, you've got to negotiate the price or give them something or satisfy them in some way if you can't do it verbally. What Roger suggested in his presentation, which worked beautifully and I've taught for years, he takes 1% of his gross sales. If you're making $1 million a year, then that's what, $10,000. And he builds it into his budget, just like rent, utilities, and all his other overhead costs. So it's part of his hourly rate. It's part of his flat rate or whatever type of pricing you have. And that way,
Tom, let's back up a step, right? I mean, it's easy for a company that's already set up that way, right? So Roger came out of the gate set up that way, right?
No, he didn't. Matter of fact, Roger went through
it. It was very different, wasn't it? Give us a synopsis of kind of how, Roger's story a little bit.
Roger has a very interesting story. He used to do new construction, installation, and service. And a little light bulb went off in his head at one point in time. He said, you know what? I'm doing three different things, and I'm working really, really, really hard, and I'm not making much money. He said, something's got to change. So he took some time off, didn't tell his employees or anybody else, and thought through the process and looked at his three areas. And he realized that the most profitable thing that he did was service. So he decided to create a brand new company that only did service, 100%, period. That's all we're going to do. And we're going to be the best service company in Kansas City. And that's what he did. And he went through several different things. For instance, he had crummy looking trucks. So he went to full size box trucks. with the side on it so that all the parts would be with him wherever he went. He didn't have to go back and forth to the shop, and it was a moving billboard. He started paying his guys a lot more money. He changed many, many things from an economic standpoint, and part of that transition was the 100% customer satisfaction. And he put money in there for that so that if he ever had a customer complain, he could be have a smile on his face, give him whatever he needed to give him to make him happy, and with one request, that if I take care of this and I give your money back or whatever it happens to be, that you'll at least give us an opportunity to work with you one more time. And that was his policy then. And as far as I know, it has been his policy ever since.
Yeah, it's interesting because Roger has since retired, has moved on, his company has merged with another company. And you look at the current company's website, they still have that culture that Roger instilled way back at that time on their website for a full year from the date of your invoice. If you're not if you're dissatisfied with the work in your home in any way, we'll make every effort to meet your expectations or remove the equipment if applicable, and we'll cheerfully refund 100% of your money. Right. So still today, that culture, that thought that Roger had created way back when, still prevails.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's, again, tells you how important culture is in a business, because when the leadership changes, the culture continues or should continue.
Mm-hmm. And the reality is every company has a culture, right? The question is it a good culture or a bad culture?
Exactly.
Right. And how do we transfer that culture with the transfer of leadership is so important. And yeah, Roger, again, spells out such a compelling story, and it works. He's proved it works, because quite frankly, when he made all those changes, right, you said he got new trucks, he paid his guys a lot more, put money aside for 100% satisfaction guarantee, he was priced significantly higher than anybody in the market at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. When he started his current company, before he went to that, was I think like $75 to $85 an hour for plumbers, which back then was fairly high. He realized mm-hmm. when he added all these extra costs, he was going to have to go to flat rate pricing, so the customer never saw it. And what happened was, when he got everything in there with the raises for the guys, the new trucks, the customer satisfaction, and probably seven or eight other things, his internal hourly rate was $195 an hour, which was unheard of back in 1995. But once he started that program and concentrated solely on service, every single year, he went up and up and up and up and increased profits.
Well, talking about customer service, that brings us to our next program, or the next speaker that we had pulled out here. And that's a program by a guy by the name of Larry Wingett. Now, Larry did, 10 to 12 different programs for us along the way. And first off, when I bring up Larry's name, what goes through your mind, Tom?
Loud, a little bit crude. It's kind of like being caught in the woodshed with your dad, and he's going to speak straight to you. It's stuff you need to hear, and you really don't want to hear it. He says the quiet things out loud, but he is probably the most entertaining speaker I've ever heard in my life. If you never listen to one of ours, get on YouTube and tune in. He has great information, and it's hilarious most of the time.
And again, it's all solid gold, isn't it? Right? And when you go through that. So let's listen, give Larry a quick 2-minute listen.
You know, I ask every group that I speak to, how many of them like to have more fun, make more money, be more successful? Everybody I talk to would like to have those things. None of us are that different from other people. I spoke in 1 week's time. I did pawnbrokers, probation officers, and bank presidents. Folks, that's a good mix of folks, I got to tell you. And I found out that all of them have the very same thing in common, just like you, just like me. We all want to have more success. We all want to make more money. We all want to have a good time. Most of us don't. Most of us don't achieve the success, make the amount of money, have as much fun as we ought to, as we deserve to. In fact, most of us never get the things that we set out to in life. And why is that? Well, I don't have a good answer for that. But I will tell you this morning, there are some principles that we can learn in our lives that will help us be more successful, make a whole lot more money, and have a better time. And today I want to share with you some of those principles. Now, I will tell you that I'm primarily a business speaker. I don't like business very much, though. The good news is, I found out you don't have to like business, you don't even have to be particularly good at business in order to be phenomenally successful in business. We got to understand what true success in business comes from. You see, it doesn't come from being great in business. It comes from being great people. You see, I believe that business gets better when people get better. Sales get better when salespeople get better. Husbands get better when wives get better. Wives get better when husbands get better. Kids get better when parents get better. There's a flow to how it all works. And when I discovered that flow, when I discovered that everything around me would get better, when I got better for it, that's when true success started happening in my life. That's the way it works. There's always a flow. Audiences get better when speakers get better. That's the way it works. I followed a guy the other day. He stepped off the stage and said, "Larry, lousy crowd." What I wanted to say was, "Lousy speech." I mean, we've got to understand the flow of how it all works, and that's what's important. Let me quickly tell you who I am. Now, I know most of you are looking at the little thing there as I got up, and you're punching each other saying, "Who is this guy? I never heard of him before. I've heard lots of speakers. I never heard of Larry Wingate before." I got to tell you, folks, last night when I got here, I looked over the registration list. I never heard of any of y'all either, so...
So that was a good program by Larry. You just gave that little bit of a hint, but he gave a really nice synopsis in there, really of kind of the rest of that program. Isn't it amazing what the way we treat other people, how that ultimately reflects back on us, our companies, our success, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it is, and he emphasizes over and over again the things we complain about. Are usually other people, other situations, and he just reflects it right back on us. And what are we doing? How are we doing it better? Why aren't we doing a good job? Why wasn't it accepted? Why don't they like us? Why do our customers turn away from us? And it's because of who we are for the most part.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it was interesting. Just this last week, I was at a contractor annual dealer meeting for one of our distributor customers, and there was a speaker there that had a similar message, and it kind of echoes what Larry's saying here. It's the whole idea of too many of us focus on us and what we want, right? If we just focus on the customer, if we focus on what they want, solving their problems and being nice to them. People ultimately, what do you say? Buy from people who?
You like.
Right?
You have a relationship with.
Buy from people they know, they like, and they trust, right? So without a doubt. And so, again, if I don't like you, odds are I'm not going to do business with you. And so what we get gets more of us. Right. So I like that one. Any other thoughts on Larry's programs in general?
No, just, again, strongly urge people to listen to him, whether it's not through our website or just on YouTube. He's got some great information in just about any and every area you could think of. So highly promote him. And he's very entertaining in the middle of the process.
He is. You know, you go back and you listen to some of these programs again. And as we were listening to him, and we were just laughing out loud again. It's fun to listen to a program where you get good, solid information, but you also walk away from it with being entertained along the way. So that's always fun. The next program that I want to talk about real briefly is a program that you outlined, and it's a little bit more certainly tactical. And it's a program called 12 Questions That You Must Ask Your Accountant by Tom Shea. And Tom basically addresses areas, because again, you've said throughout your career, Tom, that most contractors are people who what? Right? They know their business, they know their craft, just don't have the number side of the business.
Exactly.
And Tom is speaking directly to you on that one when it comes to that one. So let's just listen to a moment of Tom's of one of Tom's program where he's introducing the first of his 12 questions.
And then you are handed a folder with your financial statements in it. Perhaps a profit and loss statement, a balance sheet, perhaps a statement of cash flow that goes with it. There may be a couple other documents that the accountant has told you that you need. And the accountant says, "Let's review this." And the accountant goes through certain items, and they may begin using a bunch of the accounting terms that we struggle to understand, such as current ratio, asset ratio, debt-to-equity ratio, things of that nature, and already our head is beginning to spin. We're not understanding what these numbers are. We don't understand what the ratios are. Primarily what we're looking at is, so what was my total revenue? And what were my operating expenses as a whole? And then we're looking at, and so what was the bottom line? And what our other big concern becomes is, we know what the balance is in the checking account. And then we turn around and we look at the statement that the accountant has given us, the profit and loss or income statement, whichever terms they choose to use. And you're going, wow, revenue's up. Things are going good. And it says that I'm making money. So where's the cash? Where is this money if I've got so little sitting in my checking account and it says I've made this amount of money and this isn't the first month that this is happening? This has gone on month after month after month, perhaps to the point that sometimes I'm even having to delay when I pay a bill just because I have not collected from some of my customers. So question number one, item number one on our list, is to make a point that you may not be carrying your share of the conversation because the accountant is using these terms and you're not understanding them. You may not be carrying your end of the conversation because you don't understand these. The question I'm going to ask is, perhaps your accountant knows you don't know these things. I see this rather frequently. The accountant knows that you don't know this stuff and taking sides with you. The accountant is not helping you to learn these terms. The accountant is not helping you to understand how these terms are relevant. Hence, why would you even want to learn this stuff? And the accountant is not bringing this over into your language.
That program, you know, it's interesting because that one really speaks near and dear to our heart, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Right.
Yeah, we've been telling contractors for years, if there's no money left in the checkbook, there's a problem somewhere. And they always go to their accountant because why? Well, accountants work with numbers, so they must understand business. Well, the reality is most accountants don't understand business. They understand taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They put things in the context of what it looks like from a tax flow or tax perspective, but not from a cash flow perspective. And that's what the contractor lives with every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the things you've said over and over in your seminars, Bill, is that if you're meeting with your accountant, which most people don't even do, but if you are meeting with your accountant and he's not asking you questions or giving you suggestions on how to improve your company, you need to find another accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's very few accountants out there that understand accounting and understand business. If you ever find one of those, I don't care what they charge, pay them. They'll be worth it.
Yeah, without a doubt, I agree with that. Yeah, because again, we both said, right, your P&L will lie to you every day of the week, right? It'll tell you you're making money even if you're not. And that is at the heart, right? That difference between cash flow and accounting. And if we don't get our arms around that piece of the puzzle, we are going to be in trouble. And so we need to understand it. That was just the first of 12 different questions that that Tom says that we need to be talking to our accountant about. Yeah, you've always said, Tom, right? There's three relationships that you need to foster in your business: your banker, your attorney, and your CPA. Right? It needs to be a two-way conversation, right? They need to be helping us understanding our business better and growing better.
Yep.
Well, good. You know, so that actually brings us to the last program that we have here, and this one is as much entertaining as it does make us stop and think for a moment. We have the pleasure of having an entire program by a gentleman by the name of Frank Abagnale on the program. Now, you know, Frank did a program. If for anybody who's watched movies or is a movie buff, you know Frank. I mean, he had an incredible life. They ultimately made a movie of his life called Catch Me If You Can. And Frank is actually telling his story in his words. And but the program itself is called Keep Your Priorities in Order. All right. So let's just get a little bit of a flavor of Frank's program, if we can.
For those of you not familiar with me, back in the 1960s, many newspapers used to write about me quite often. Some newspapers for many years simply just referred to me as the Great Imposter. The New York Times wrote a syndicated column about me. The New York Times wrote about me for about 5 years in a weekly column. The New York Times, like the FBI, really didn't know my identity, so the New York Times was just fond of calling me the Skyway Man. The Wall Street Journal summed up my career a number of years ago and said that probably I would go down in history by far the world's greatest con man that ever lived. I earned all of those reputations. When I was 16 years old, I successfully impersonated an airline pilot for Pan American Airlines for 2 years until I was 18. At the age of 18, I became the chief resident pediatrician of a Georgia hospital where I practiced medicine there for about a year. Don't laugh, I'd have been a gynecologist, but at 18 I didn't know any better. At the age of 19, having never been to law school in my life, I took the state bar exams in the state of Louisiana. I passed the bar and became a licensed attorney. Before my 19th birthday was over, I was appointed the Assistant Attorney General of the state, where I practiced law in that position for about a year. At the age of 20, I was a college professor at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. I taught two full semesters there as a PhD. Mormons haven't quite got over that yet, but they're still working on it. And, of course, before I was old enough to drink, before actually reaching my 21st birthday, I was a millionaire twice over, having cashed over $2.5 million worth of bad checks in 26 foreign countries and all 50 states in the United States. Last year, I thought about running for Congress. But about 19 years ago, in a grocery store in Houston, Texas, a young girl decided to become my wife. I was stocking groceries. I didn't have a dime to my name. I told her I had been in prison and that anyone could send me back to prison at any time. Yet she became my wife anyway. She changed my life. She gave me three beautiful boys who today are 15, 12, and 10 years old. They're my life. They're my heart. They're my soul. They're my being. Everything I have, everything I've achieved, every success I've had because of the love of a woman and because of three little boys who have a great deal of respect for their daddy. Through this, I've learned two things that I would like to leave you with. There comes a time in all of our lifetimes when we come to that final realization that there will never, ever be anyone in your life, not your children, not your wife, who loves you more than the people you call your parents. No one. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. If they're still here, you tell them you love them. You give them a hug. You give them a kiss. And to those many men in the audience, I'm afraid that this is a lesson most men never learn. And I'm afraid that this is a lesson that most men learn when they're 50 years old but should have learned when they were 18. I happen to think it would be quite a world if upon graduation from high school, a young boy learned this lesson. That success has absolutely nothing to do with money. Being a man has nothing to do with achievements, skills, professions, nothing. There's only one thing that makes a man, and that is that he loves his wife. He is faithful to his wife. He is loyal to his wife. And that next to God, he takes his wife and his children, and they become the most important thing in his life. You show me this man, and I don't care what he does, who he is, what he's been, and I'll show you a real man. I've done a lot of things in my life, but I assure you I have done nothing greater, nothing more rewarding, nothing more worthwhile than simply being a good husband, a good father, and what I strive to be every day of my life, a good daddy.
Well, Tom, that's, you know, again, that program is, you know, again, like I said, it's as entertaining as anything as you go through that. I mean, who would think that somebody could do all of this stuff, right? But
it's a really special treat. I strongly suggest people listen to this one. Many of us have seen the movie Catch Me If You Can. It's a great movie, but it's not the real life.
Mm-hmm.
Frank was the keynote speaker at an ACCA convention many, many years ago that was recorded. And this is his actual testimony of what actually happened. And it's much more detailed, much more alive. There's things that were distorted totally in the movie. But in the essence, the whole thing, and he kind of says it towards the end, this might sound really exciting to you in terms of my life and what I went through, but he said, I cried myself to sleep every night when I was away. I miss my family. I miss my mom. I miss my dad. I grew up with nobody around him. In essence, make sure that your priorities are in order. Don't miss what's important in life. And it's well worth listening to. It really is.
Business could take up so much time, so much energy, so much of who we are, that we let that get in front of those things that truly are important, don't we?
Yeah, it's I say it all the time, usually at most of the end of the presentations I do. You know, business started out being part of your life so that you could support your family. And if you're not really, really, really careful, it becomes your life, and it's not. It's a big part of your life, but it's not. You got to remember why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, one of the other things in our succession planning program, we talk about, you know, right, that being one of the reasons why business owners get started. Another one being because they wanted to control their own time. Now, how's that working out for a lot of us? Now, yeah, that will be one thing. Yeah, that certainly, Tom, I have always admired that about you. Right. Every time I was in the Owensboro office with you, you know, didn't matter how busy we were, didn't matter how much stuff was on the plate, didn't matter what was going on. What time did you end your day every day?
5 o'clock. Went home no matter what.
You left the office at 5 o'clock every day, and you were going to be going home to see your wife. Right. And your kids when they were there. And again, you've done a marvelous job at that. You know, that was one piece that I always took away that, okay, that's one I need to emulate, because it's easy for the business to chew up so much of your time. Family is way more important than anything we're doing in the business.
Yep. Lord's number one, your family's number two. And if the business starts interrupting either one of those, you need to change your priorities.
That's absolutely right. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, Tom, 28 years, this has been an incredible run. Again, we're not completely done yet. We have no more plans moving forward, but Prophet University, as it stands today, will come to the end of its life, and we'll move into the next phase of the program, once again, with new technology, new offerings. So stay tuned for that. Tom, any final thoughts that you have for us regarding Prophet University in general and this entire run?
No, it's just amazing to me as you look back at those number of presentations we've got, how many great people there are in this industry, consultants, contractors, individuals who have a lot of talent in a lot of different areas. And it reminds us once again why it's important to become part of a mixed group, because none of us know all that stuff. We need to get input from other people who've walked before us and made some of the mistakes that we're making right now, so we can help ourselves in the middle of that process.
Without a doubt. You know, all this stuff, you know, that is the thing about our industry, the trades industry in general, is people are always willing to share. They're willing to help their fellow tradesmen. And again, this industry is full of people like that. This entire library of audio programs is nothing but that. And so these programs will continue to be available out there. They're available for any of our Contractor Academy members. If you have a Contractor Academy, again, it's $29 a month. It's a whole bunch of self-paced training programs, plus if you look in once you're logged into your Contractor Academy account, upper right-hand corner, you'll find Prophet University audio series. You have access to this entire library where you can listen to them or download programs to keep in a library of your own. Tom, I can't thank you enough for the 28 years of the dedication that you put into this audio program. It's fun to go back and listen to some of the programs. It's fun to hear some of the voices that are there. One of the things that's absolutely certain is every program out there is still valid today, still worth listening to, and still contains gold that can help your company. Thank you so much, my friend.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Prophet University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.